The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of H2O. My name is Jason Hunt. Sitting across from me, Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello there.
And in the wake of the possibility that Constantine is going to be done, and in the wake of the speculation of how long the new Krypton show will last once it goes on, and in the wake of the news that Continuum is going to get a final season that's only 6 episodes long, mm-hmm. we thought we'd kind of talk a little bit about shows that died prematurely, shows that didn't get that second season that probably should have, mm-hmm. and maybe we'll touch on some shows that died pretty much when they needed to die. I can think of a few right off the top of my head.
There are.
And some that may have lasted a little bit past their prime.
Well,
too.
There are several that were out there welcome, I think.
Yeah. So let's touch just briefly on Constantine for a second, because we talked about this in the Rogues Gallery, mm-hmm. Which is up now, and now has its own listing on iTunes, by the way. Oh, yeah. And we're looking at it. NBC has halted production past the first 13 episode order.
Right.
And speculation is it's done. It's finished. And you were saying on that show on Rogues how it was kind of a shame because Zed's arc looks to be just now starting.
Right.
With the cult and all that other stuff that's kicking off in this last episode that we saw. And then we get word about Krypton.
Right.
Which is going to be on Sci-Fi.
Right. Well, and on one hand, yay for Sci-Fi bringing back science fiction everybody's got to do the comic book show now. Every network has to have one. If you don't, you don't get to, I don't know, they don't let you in the clubhouse or something.
But it's Krypton.
Yeah, but apparently it's not only Krypton, but it's Krypton generations ago. So
and that's got me asking, what's the point?
Well, here's the plus side.
We know how it ends.
Well, I know, but here's the plus side of that. It's farther enough in the future that the end is far enough in the future, mm-hmm. of the show that you have a whole lot of room to tell stories. The question is, are we getting Caprica 2?
I think we are.
Or are we going to get something that is wonderfully bonkers? And I think that,
wonderfully bonkers, like High Moon tried to be.
Well, no, this is David Goyer. You're not getting High Moon.
You're
not going to High Moon out of David Goyer.
Any kind of quirkiness out of David Goyer.
No, but is this a show that I was wanting?
I don't think anybody was wanting this.
Do we
care about Kal-El's grandfather?
I wasn't.
You look at this. The whole story.
Exactly.
The whole story.
Did we need Gotham?
No. Well, see, but Gotham you can at least make interesting because you have characters that people recognize.
Sure.
With Krypton, if you go back that far, I mean, you can't have Lex Luthor. You can't have Lois Lane or Lana Lang.
But you could
or
have
Jonathan
you
Martha
could,
Kent.
You could have
you could have Brainiac.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's it.
Well, but the thing is that, like I said, I have no great hopes for this show whatsoever.
I don't either. Well, and I was looking at the pedigree. I mean, you consider sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Okay, they are making an effort,
right.
And we have talked about this. They've turned it around,
sure.
And they're recognizing that there are things they need to do to right the ship. And great, mm-hmm. good for them. Pat on the back. David S. Goyer.
Hit and miss. I mean, sometimes he's good, sometimes he's not.
Not a fan favorite right now because of some of the comments that he's made.
Well, no, yeah, he just...
A lot of people consider him to be a hack writer.
Yeah.
And then you look at the story that they're planning to tell, but also consider the production company. Mm-hmm. It's Warner Horizon is producing this. And what do they do? Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty Little Liars?
Mm-hmm.
And then police procedurals. They use soap operas and cop shows. So what is this going to be? You've got the House of L shamed and ostracized. Like, what? Why? I mean, it was bad. See, the thing about it is that if you stop and consider, one of the reasons why it was so frustrating for Jor-El and the council and all this other stuff is because In every version of the story, when you actually have any interaction between the council and Jor-El, and Jor-El's trying to say, hey, we're doing something wrong here. We need to fix this. There's a problem. There's danger. Everybody's like, you're the nut. You're not like your father. So, you know, the comparison has always been that Jor-El has been the black sheep of the family.
Well, I think what you can do here, if you must make this show. And this is where it all falls apart, because it's story.
Remember? Yes.
If you must make this show, then you have it be the arc of Kal-El's grandfather, basically taking the dishonored House of El for whatever the reasons.
Right.
Hand waving him. And you basically have him over, say, you know, a 4 or 5 year, you know, you actually plan it out. So you've actually got, you know, show's only going to run X long.
Right.
And you basically have him rebuild everything and become this hero. And the final episode is, you know, his son is born. And it's like, and I shall name him, you know, I shall name him Jor-El. And it's like, ta-da, and that's it. But the thing is that nobody does that. They don't.
Well, the other thing is, and from a lot of the comments that I've been seeing online, nobody cares.
Well, I said,
nobody cares about this show. There's no characters for us to be involved. We're not emotionally invested in these characters because they never existed before.
Well, and that's a plus. In some degrees, that's actually a plus, because you are.
It didn't help Caprica.
No, it didn't help Caprica, and that of course has got to be your guide if you're going to do something like this, because you can potentially tell lots of great stories. The problem is one of the biggest problems with Caprica, from what I hear, I never watched the show. I have never seen it.
It was pure soap opera.
Well, I mean,
that's all it was.
It had some
Cylon dressing on it, but it was pure soap opera.
Well, I think you know, if you go one generation back, and this was a big concern about Gotham, was that, okay, but we know how it ends. We know what's going to happen. It's like, that's the problem. That's the problem with doing origin stories or prequels. You know, that's why the Star Wars prequels were so problematic, was because
we know how they end,
and we didn't need the explanation. It was a story that no one was calling for.
Well, and with Krypton, you're getting a story that nobody's calling for. Plus the fact that it's not going to be relevant because the planet blows up. You know, Superman. I was talking about this with my son the other day, and the origin story. We talked about this on Rogue. Where were we talking about this? The origin story for Superman starts with the baby shooting off into space.
Right.
Nothing earlier than that has any impact on him.
Right.
Until after he's a grown up and he gets told who he really is. But up until that point, he's Clark Kent.
Right.
And everything that he knows and everything he understands about life and all of his values and everything come from Jonathan and Martha.
Yeah.
It has, and Krypton has absolutely nothing to do with Superman, other than being his planet where he was born.
Right.
And so that there renders this whole series completely irrelevant, because one, it doesn't matter to the character of Superman. Two, you can't tie it in to any of the other shows, because it's early, it's way early. The planet blows up by the time all of the rest of this stuff is going on, so you can't do any crossovers.
Nope.
You maybe could have Zod, depending on how old Zod is relative to everybody else.
Or the lifespan of
Kryptonians. And you could do, and you could do Brainiac, you know, the whole bottled city of Kandor and all of that.
Right.
But then what?
Yeah,
everything else is just going to be all completely new, made up, and who cares?
It's going to be our best hope here is a science fiction show that is connected to the Superman mythos over here. You know, and for the folks of you home who are just listening to us and can't see me waving my arm, I'm waving it way over here.
Well, the problem with it is, even if it's tied in, there's very little to tie it in, because you know, like I said, there's no reason for this story to exist.
Here's what you'll do. Here's what they'll do. This is where we'll get the new gods. And they'll have...
they'll be Kryptonians?
No. They'll have...
Well, because the Amazons are supposed to be Kryptonians.
Well, that was one of the
stories.
That was a rumor.
Yeah.
But it's just, I mean, it's... The one thing that might make the show work is we are in many ways talking about this, a lot of the similar concerns about why Gotham made no sense. You know, it's a prequel that no one was asking for. We know how it ends, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Except Gotham has the advantage of having characters that you are familiar with.
Right.
You have, well, you have Nygma and Bullock and Jim Gordon and all these other characters.
But to some degree, that's also a certain amount of freedom for the writers, because they basically aren't, all they have to do, they're not, this isn't the Jor-El story. This is whatever Jor-El's dad's name is.
Sieg-El.
Okay.
Yes.
Which they'll change for the TV show.
No, it was named for Jerry Siegel.
Well, I know, but they'll change it.
Well, yeah, they probably will.
It's not a cool enough name for
TV show. Because originally he was Jor-El 1, and then we had Jor-El Jr. and then Kal-El, but John Byrne changed it. But I don't see any need for it.
Personally, I don't see it
going past pilot.
The pilot would need to be really, really good. And it would need to be something that makes you sit there and go, all right, I want to see this. And until we see the first trailer for it will tell us everything we need to know.
Well, and with it being Goyer and with it being now Ian Goldberg, who's writing the script, to his credit, he does have the Sarah Connor Chronicles on his resume.
Right.
But his most recent work has been Once Upon a Time, which everybody at this point is now hate watching. And not really, I mean, I'm sure there's an audience that still loves it to death, but all of us are sitting there going, huh? Really?
Well, but in all fairness...
I don't know how much of that is his,
well,
but...
Well, in all fairness to the writers on Once Upon a Time, they're stuck in a... They are... When you're writing for a show with that kind of story, you're kind of stuck with your...
Yeah, there's only certain things you can do.
Right. It's like, okay, I have to make Regina be... the bad guy again? I thought we were being nice to her this week.
I keep saying it. Regina works better when she's a villain. So does Rumpelstiltskin. After the first season, you put him on a redemption arc, it killed the show.
Well, but the thing is, commit one way or the other. Mm-hmm. Either have her be villainous or give her her redemption arc. Quit putzing around and make up your bloody mind. Because the reason... Okay, this show is... The show from Go was incredibly silly.
Right.
All right.
And they didn't embrace that.
They didn't embrace it fully. Maybe they embraced it in parts. But the thing is that if you're going to do a show like that, just go nuts. Mm-hmm. Have fun. And quit recycling the same thing. And it's another one of those shows. It's on, it's for as much as we like Arrow, quit blowing up the city,
Yeah, really.
And you just have to bear in mind that every now and again, it's okay to do something different. And we're sick of the same things being recycled. Let Rumpelstiltskin either be a villain or let him have a redemption arc. Yeah. Regina, let her be a villain. Let her have the redemption arc. And if they get redeemed, let them be redeemed and bring in a new bad guy. A real bad guy, not Peter Pan. A wasted opportunity. A really good evil Peter Pan would have been just awesome because creepy kids... Our creepy kids.
Yeah, that would have been interesting to watch.
But
at least.
Poor writing.
Yeah. Well, and poor writing sometimes is the reason why a lot of these shows don't go past first season. But at the same time, we say poor writing, but a lot of times the writers are just getting into their rhythm and finding their footing and figuring out what these shows are when they finally die.
Oh, I know. Some of these shows that were very, very interesting and very uneven.
Mm-hmm.
You look at shows like, say, Arrow. That first season.
Yeah, that first season was a mess.
Really rocky.
And I think part of that was, I think they were trying to figure out just how much comic book show they were and how much CW show they were. Because if you go back and you look at the first season of Arrow, there's a lot of the CW angst, the pretty people angst that's so typical of the CW shows. And as that season progressed and they were able to earn more comic book style, I think it evened out. And I think it balanced by the time you get to the end of the season and then you jump into the second season, it wasn't a typical CW soapy drama type of thing anymore.
Well, I think it also benefited from being on the CW because they are likely, just by the nature of being a smaller network, they're more likely to give a show a chance to stay on the air.
They give it time to breathe. Well, and we see that with ABC with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because in the old days, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. would have died after the first season.
Oh, it wouldn't have made it through. I don't think it would have made it all the way through.
Yeah.
I think it would
because
have been.
Because the number, that's one of those, the numbers don't matter because it's not there for the numbers.
Well,
it's there
to sell the movies. And we kind of talked about this, is that it's sort of, it's not quite cancel proof, but it's about as close as you can get.
Yeah. So shows that didn't make it past the first season, there are a lot of them. I know Firefly is always going to be the one that jumps out at everybody.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to kind of, okay. We'll just stipulate Firefly.
How far back do you want to go? Because you and I have mentioned this before. Misfits of Science. Which was, for those of you who don't recall this TV show from,
Lord,
85.
This is pre-Friends.
Oh, yeah.
Pre-Ace Ventura. Pre-Bruce Springsteen for Courtney Cox.
That's right. And she was.
Was she in the Bruce Springsteen video before or after Misfits?
85.
I don't know. I think the video happened right before the show. I think that's what got her on the show.
But for those of you who don't know, cast your mind back to 1985. So this is just a couple of years really after MTV kicked in. The X-Men were having a major revival in the comic book world. And this was probably the closest thing we were going to get. A lot of us thought it was the closest thing we were ever going to get to a live action X-Men. Because essentially it is a man who basically brings a team of young people with unusual powers together. And, guy who can shrink, and you got, Johnny B. Good, Johnny Bukowski, Johnny B., a musician who has electrical powers. Courtney Cox, who was a telekinetic.
You remember the special effects for that? Whenever she did her power, it was just almost exactly like Peter Parker's spider sense in the Nicholas Hammond show.
Yeah.
It was that, you know? I saw that one time and I'm like, hey, I know that effect. She's got spider sense.
Yeah, well, we had a telekinetic. We had a guy who could shoot electricity. We had a guy who could freeze things. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the X-Men. And for a lot of us, and it was an uneven show. I mean, no doubt about it. It was fairly formulaic, but at the same time, it was one of those things that if you'd let it breathe, it was a greatest American hero. Wannabe to some degree.
Well, and you also consider too, not only was Courtney Cox in that show, but Kevin Peter Hall was in that show.
That's true.
And you may not recognize the name and you won't know his face, but you know his performances because he was the Predator.
Right.
He was in the suit for the Predator. Mm-hmm. And I think, didn't he play the alien as well?
I don't think so. No,
he wasn't the alien. He was the Predator. He was also Harry in Harry and the Hendersons. Mm-hmm. He was the Bigfoot Sasquatch monster. Misfits of Science was one of those where it had a lot of potential and just didn't quite get over the hump. This is back before cable really took off. So, the networks, it was an NBC show, I think, wasn't it?
It was NBC. It only got 16 episodes, which tells you that
wasn't even a full season.
In those days, it wasn't even a full season because you were like 22, 24.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting idea that didn't quite have it. Now, it would be very easy to talk about shows that had, and one of the reasons we're talking about one season shows is because there's a lot of great shows that only made it, Star Trek only made it three seasons. Farscape made it, didn't make it five.
Yeah.
And then you have shows that go on forever. Like, what's that one? God, about the kid with powers.
The kid with powers?
Yeah, came from another planet. Smallville, forever. Okay. And it went on, that was a show that went on way, way, way too long. But
yeah, well, and I think the reason for that is because of the Siegel and Shuster lawsuits. They couldn't put him in the suit. And so they kept, I mean, it was still, as long as it was popular and people were watching it, they wanted to keep going. I mean, CW was like, keep going.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
The biggest thing that bothered me about Smallville, and I know we're kind of off, we're straying off the rails here. The biggest thing that bothered me about Smallville is how close Smallville and Metropolis were.
You know?
I mean, it was like, we're in small. We're at the Daily Planet. We're on the Kent Farm. Daily Planet, Kent Farm. He's like, no.
Well, that's because
Metropolis is on the East Coast.
That's because Metropolis is Kansas City.
No.
Well, apparently.
Metropolis is in. No, Central City is Kansas City. Metropolis is on the East Coast. Smallville is in the middle of the country.
Apparently not in Smallville. Okay, we can go further back than that, though. We can go back to one of the classic ones that I got in one season. Kolchak the Night Stalker.
Yes.
The X-Files.
Which got a remake.
It got the X-Files long before the X-Files was the X-Files.
Yep.
And it was kind of the prototype for any one of those shows. You wouldn't have Supernatural or...
Dresden Files.
Dresden Files or Constantine or... Well, no. Yeah. No, because Constantine... Hellblazer, the comic is significantly, but you know what? Even then, I could see Night Stalker.
But Constantine probably wouldn't have made it to TV if we hadn't had any of the rest of those.
No, but it, yeah, Kolchak, that was, oh man, Darren McGavin.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a show that honestly, that is if you're going to remake a TV show as a movie, start a new Night Stalker franchise.
Well, see, the thing about it is, though, they tried that. ABC did it here, six years ago?
Do it features, do full bowl, you know, give it the big treatment, you know, and actually, and make it, you know, let the budget go.
Who would you cast as Kolchak?
Ooh. See, that's a good question.
Judge Reinhold. I'm kidding.
Well, you kind of need somebody,
you need somebody older.
Well, and here's the thing. You know, remember that Kolchak was a newspaper reporter, and that's a weird place to be anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's not something, but you can still do it. You can still have
to
be a...
Well, it could be an online journalist.
Oh, sure. Or actually a tabloid journalist because, you know, and...
David Strathairn?
Ooh, I'd love it. That would be great. He would be fantastic as Kolchak. I like watching the guy work, so...
Or Lance Henriksen.
See,
Henriksen could do it.
Bring me back Millennium.
Well, yeah. There's another one there.
Give Millennium a proper season, a proper ending, as opposed to its X-Files at the moment. But
right,
and go back to the original storyline for Millennium because they went, you know, way afield.
And you're talking about the TV show Millennium, not the movie with Kris Kristofferson Millennium.
No. In fact, folks, if you ever want to entertain yourself, go find the book, and then read the book, and then watch the movie, and ask yourself. What happened? Okay, but here's Nowhere Man from the 90s, 95.
Oh yeah, Bruce Greenwood.
Yeah, it was The Prisoner for the 90s. And speaking of which, of course, The Prisoner was only one season.
Right.
But they also didn't know how to end The Prisoner. And that was actually the reason it was one season is because they kind of, you know, he kind of forced it to be, Patrick McGowan kind of made it be one season. I'm going to give them an ending that
they can't recover from.
But yeah, so you have your show, Nowhere Man, where basically take the prisoner and cross it with the Incredible Hulk, essentially, because it was or the fugitive, really.
Right.
It's both. Because the fugitive, well, the Incredible,
well, the
Hulk,
Incredible
was
Hulk
was the fugitive, with sure, giant green people.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a really interesting show that never quite, and especially left on a cliffhanger. But and of course that was back on was that on UPN?
Yeah, yeah. That was right. Well, because yeah, it was the same time when Voyager showed up.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nowhere Man was on right afterward.
It might have been, yeah.
Or it may have been on a different night. I don't know.
Yeah, but it was one of those. And it was a really intriguing. But UPN's viewing numbers were really pretty small.
Yeah.
I think Star Trek was about the only reason people were watching UPN.
Well, because see, in UPN, because I was reading a little bit in the Joss Whedon biography that Amy Pascal did, and they were talking about the fact when WB and UPN merged, that one of the reasons behind that was the fact that UPN was getting so they were both getting really terrible numbers, and UPN had programmed mostly toward the the black community with all of their comedies and whatnot. And then Star Trek is just sitting there,
right,
just kind of out there by itself. And Nowhere Man was another one of those that didn't find an audience because everything else on the network was going to a completely different group. And you had, you know, the WB stuff was like Dawson's Creek and
all the
soapy stuff, teen angsty things, and, you know, Charmed and those kind of things. So when they merged, they were finding their footing all over again. Buffy the Vampire Slayer was part of that. Angel was part of that. You had UP, you had Star Trek Voyager. Nowhere Man was gone by then. But yeah, the numbers for either one of those, what they were calling them, netlets back then, they weren't even networks because you didn't have programming for 24 hours. It was just the afternoon block.
Exactly.
So those shows died quick deaths back then because they weren't sustainable.
No, they really weren't. And it was an interesting time because, you know, there was kind of a little bit of a genre explosion back then.
Yeah.
I think some of that came out of the success of the X-Files.
Do you remember Codename Foxfire with Joanna Cassidy? They were spies.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of like a Charlie's Angels type of thing.
Yeah.
They had the gadgets. I mean, it wasn't genre so much, but
no.
But it was cool because Joanna Cassidy, this was after Blade Runner. and Joanna Cassidy was the lead, and you're like, "Oh, I know her."
Right.
She was in Blade Runner, you know?
Oh, well.
But yeah, that was one. What other ones?
There's a lot.
There's a lot.
But I think we should probably take a break and talk about our sponsor.
We have a sponsor.
We do have a sponsor.
Yes, and you're drinking from a coffee cup we got from that sponsor.
I am, and you know what's on this coffee cup, folks? It's the best part of. This is from a cartoon,
which is the best part of the movie.
Did you see
Paramount is making a pitch for the fourth Transformers to get a Best Picture nod?
And I say, bold move, bold move. I wish you the best of luck because it's doomed to failure. But by God, I admire your balls because I think that it's just, you know, that's a brave move, and I think it's. It's tilting at windmills, and I'm a big fan of that sort of thing. But they got to be kidding themselves.
Yeah, they are. There's no way that it's going to get a big picture.
They wrote that copy, and someone sat there and went.
Let's do it. Come on. That photograph, meanwhile, over at the Marvel offices that kept floating around.
Yeah,
same kind of thing. All right, our sponsor is SuperheroStuff.com. They have a lot of licensed merchandise from various different franchises: Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, Godzilla, Transformers, the superhero stuff, DC and Marvel. And we encourage you, especially now because they're having sales because of the Christmas season, the holiday season, I guess, to be politically correct on that. Those of you who are atheists or agnostics, just have a good day throughout this time. But for everybody else, it's a holiday season of some sort. And we encourage you to check out superherostuff.com and see what they've got on sale because they have various different things throughout the month that they'll be offering discounts on. So you can go and check them out. And we're going to go refill coffee cups and we will be right back when H2O continues.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
That is the sound of another satisfied customer getting his superhero stuff teleported to his doorstep from superherostuff.com. When you need your Batcave or Fortress of Solitude to be bigger on the inside, jump on the World Wide Web and head over to superherostuff.com at warp speed. Licensed merchandise from across the fandom multiverse.
Oh, this is so cool!
Only at superherostuff.com.
Hey everyone, Leslie Walker here, inviting you to join me and the rest of the Sci-Fi for Me crew every week as we dive into the details of the TV shows that you and we love. Did you miss your favorite show this week? Or perhaps you need someone to talk to about that latest plot twist and the implications. Well, maybe your friends don't geek out over shows like Supernatural, Grimm, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. like what your friends over at Sci-Fi for Me do, but hey, it's what we live for. So join us for the latest at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
I'm like, one episode before the show got canceled.
She would have been a good Wonder Woman at the time.
Ooh, yeah.
She would have been a good Wonder Woman.
That would have worked.
Yes. Talking about Catherine Bell.
Yeah.
Playing Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, we're back. Jason Adair, along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
This is H2O. We're talking about second seasons that weren't, and some shows that got second seasons that shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Let's see.
We were just talking about Threshold.
Threshold, yes, and that's why Catherine Bell came up in conversation because she was going to be in there.
Yeah, Carla Gugino.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
She's always worth watching. She's a very, very talented actress. And the thing is that it was nice to see her because she was primarily just doing movies at that point. And mm-hmm. It was one of those things where you're kind of surprised she ended up on a network on a TV show.
Yeah.
But it was a well cast show. I mean, Charles S. Dutton, Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
Long before Game of Thrones.
Brent Spiner.
Because basically Star Trek was off the air and it was nice to see him again and just in a different kind of role.
I think Threshold suffered from, maybe X-Files fatigue or, you know, because that had just gone off the air, I think. Invasion was on at the same time Threshold was on.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, I don't want to say they were the same premise, but they were similar. There was something under the ground, something in the water type of, lurking out there.
Right.
That was coming, and while Invasion was more to do with either aliens or viruses or something that affected, and then they got hit with Hurricane Katrina,
right?
And that show died.
Remember, Hurricane Katrina was right as the show was starting,
right?
So they had to yank all their ads, and then they had to almost have to rejigger the show in the course of doing it because immediately the hurricane, because the show starts with a hurricane.
Right.
And they basically had to just drop it. I mean, get it out, because it was supposed to be, you know, the aftermath and then all of this stuff happening during that. I mean, it was supposed to be a really ambitious kind of storytelling because you'd have social stuff.
And from the standpoint of that premise was pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And it really, it's kind of a shame when you have real life events.
Mm-hmm.
Kill a show.
Well, and you can understand the story potential.
Yeah,
and you can understand it.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, I mean,
I think it's an understandable emotional reaction where it's like, mm-hmm. I mean, there was, you know, Katrina was such a horrible, it was just a horrible disaster.
Yeah.
And I think that it'd kind of be like immediately having a show based in New York City.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer ran into that one time where they had the student right after Columbine.
Yeah.
They had that student that mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to kill you all type of thing.
Right,
and they didn't run that episode for a long time.
Yeah. And because you understand that audiences are watching this stuff not necessarily for social commentary or analysis. They're looking for entertainment and escapism.
Yeah. But at the same time, though, a lot of people, I read that on the Whedon board, the bronze, at mm-hmm. the time, when that episode finally aired, it was cathartic for a lot of people. It was one of those things was like, I needed this. I needed something to kind of give us closure. It may have been too soon.
I think that there's...
Could have been.
You know, and I think that... But, you know, that happens periodically. And, you know, one of the... Alan Moore basically reinvigorate, but we wouldn't have Constantine if we didn't have the comic book Hellblazer. We wouldn't have had a Hellblazer if Alan Moore had not taken over the completely dead in the water, sales were abysmal Swamp Thing,
right,
and revitalized it and made it an incredible, just gigantic success in horror comics. And he left the comic because they wouldn't let him do the story he wanted to tell about Swamp Thing meeting Jesus. Because Swamp Thing was thrown back in time. He's going to end up going back to the crucifixion. And Alan Moore is he's a fairly controversial writer, but at the same time,
fairly controversial writer. That's like saying water is wet.
Well, but I think that at the same time,
it's like a little bit pregnant.
No, if nothing else, it would have been a very interesting story. But of course, understandably, the folks at DC sat there and went, this might not be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So you make those decisions, and sometimes it's, you know, I think that really kind of hurt Invasion. But Threshold, I think the biggest problem with Threshold is they didn't go big enough, quick enough.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you had your characters who were basically infected by the alien alien DNA and becoming alien. And I think they should have gone bigger, quicker. Well,
and it was planned for 5 seasons.
Yeah.
And when ABC canceled it, oddly enough, the CW was going to pick it up.
Right.
And then, according to the list here, apparently they said it costs how much?
Yeah.
And then they passed.
Well, look at the cast. You know, you've got a cast who's, you know.
You know, you remember who created that show?
Oh yeah.
Tattoo run, run.
Hey, Brennan.
Nobody will recognize that reference.
No.
Sean Cassidy.
Sean Cassidy was the guy behind that, yeah. But you look at Threshold, and you look at Brennan Braga.
Yeah.
David right. Goyer.
you know, wait a minute.
Well, you know, some of these names are, some of these names keep appearing in Invasion was Sean Cassidy. Who was the producer behind that?
And I think
the other guy. There was somebody else with that.
I think that could be I don't want to say it's a problem with genre because it's not just science fiction and fantasy where you find this, where you have the same people over and 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 over again.
Mm-hmm.
Writing and directing and producing, and then they write and then they produce and then they direct and then they write and then they direct. It's And we had I've talked about this in the past with casting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even as far back, you go back as far as Star Trek or Stargate.
Right.
Or Farscape or any of those guys. There was that cross-pollination of casts where Star Trek actors were on Stargate, were on Farscape, where, you know, Farscape actors were on Stargate and Stargate mm-hmm. actors were on Farscape. And it's like Michael Shanks made every show.
Right.
You know, Michael Shanks was Hawkman on Smallville,
right.
And he was on, you know, he was on Star, you know, of course he's on Stargate, and he did this and the like, I'm kind of wanting to see new people now. I want to see new faces.
Sure.
And that the same goes on the back side of it, on the creative side of it. I want to see somebody besides Ronald D. Moore. I want to see somebody besides Brandon Braga do a science fiction show.
Mm-hmm. But know? I think with some of these cases, these are the guys who are coming in with a track record. And so they're willing to give them a little room to hang themselves.
It's but at what point does it work against you?
Oh, I think there's certainly that potential. I think it's always interesting to see somebody new come in.
Because Sci-Fi said, Ronald D. Moore, hey, Battlestar Galactica, it was a Peabody winning show. Do it again. And we got Caprica.
Well, and I think that Caprica, you end up with, again, not having seen the show, but from everything I've heard. Is and like you said earlier, they went with a soap opera route
mm-hmm.
instead of doing what they should have done, which is the first Cylon War, and it's
yeah.
and the effects of the first, you could actually have that happening off camera, and the effects on the people back home, because
yeah, you could do that because Blood and Chrome, sort of kind of runs parallel mm-hmm. just a little bit after Caprica.
So you do it. So
you could do that.
You do it. What's happening on the home front?
But
and
they
I think
didn't.
They, no, they didn't do that.
No.
Well, an interesting. You know, okay. Here's a fun thing. the series premiere of Invasion had 17 million viewers. When was the last time you saw a show that wasn't a big sports event get 17 million?
Well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. got 22.
I know.
It was an anomaly.
But it's an anomaly.
It was a weird. You don't see that ever at all anymore.
Now you're looking at, if you get 9, well, it's like, that was the 7-day numbers for Doctor Who, I think, are at 8 million,
something
9
like
million.
That. Yeah.
Which is considered a huge success.
Yeah, because nowadays, you know, there's so much out there to watch
mm-hmm.
that, you know, anything below 10 million is, you know, your borderline
yeah.
right there. But then again, you have shows that are critically acclaimed,
mm-hmm.
well written, mm-hmm. well acted, well produced, and nobody gets it. Awake is one of those.
Yeah. That was such a good show.
It was. It was a fantastic show. And it was so intriguing, this notion of whether or not he's actually jumping between dimensions or if there's something wrong with his brain.
And it was quite content to not answer that question.
Yeah, until they had to.
Well, and even then they gave you an answer that wasn't an answer.
Yeah.
But it was the answer you're going to get. But it was such, and Jason Isaacs had been so... We had so gotten so kind of used to seeing him play bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot, I think a lot of American audiences, their first exposure to him was the Mel Gibson Revolutionary movie.
The Patriot.
It's basically Braveheart during the Revolutionary War.
Braveheart and Braveheart Jr.
Only not anywhere near as good. But he was, you know, you got him there. You got him in the Harry Potter movies, playing Malfoy Sr. He was really good at the sneering, arrogant British villain.
Yeah.
And he was exceptionally good in Awake. And I think it was, I remember when we watched that first, the trailer for it, the initial trailer, and everyone was just going, wow.
Yeah.
And that honestly, the whole season, the whole season
remember
was solid.
The other thing that we had talked about early on was the cinematography,
mm.
the change in color depending on which side he was on. Mm-hmm. You know, one of them was very green, one of them was very orange, and you could automatically tell just from the visuals where he was. Until later on in the season, when they started to mix it up,
right?
And then it started. It was like, wait a minute, wait. Everything started to blend.
Messing with you, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was one of those shows that the audience just. I think it had an audience,
mm-hmm.
but I think that it was unfortunately a victim. It was kind of. What year was that?
It wasn't that.
It was 3 years ago. 2 years ago.
It was. Let me look here. It was 2012. Yeah, it was only two years ago.
So I think that's a show that actually would... That's the kind of show you'd want to see on something like Netflix.
Yeah, so you could do 13 episodes all at once and binge watch it.
Right, because I think that it would really sell. Or you do it something like, we're getting it now. We're getting the True Detective model and mm-hmm. the American Horror Story.
Right.
You know, where you're basically a season... You know, you've got a plan... but you know, I think we keep running into these shows that were right on the edge of that change.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we went from, oh, it has to be an episodic show to, well, no, we need story arcs. And well, you know, we lost out with a lot of shows that didn't quite make that jump.
Right.
Or keep trying to go back to it. Intelligence, there's a reason that show got canceled. Because they didn't realize it wasn't the 80s anymore, and you can't have an episodic show like that. You actually have to have a story arc.
Yeah. The Event.
Oh, The Event, yeah.
Well, it was one of those, I mean, it wasn't very good.
No, or Flash Forward.
Flash Forward happened at a time when it was the gimmick to have a science fiction gimmick.
Right.
Flash Forward was a police procedural that had a science fiction MacGuffin.
Mm-hmm.
And The Event was kind of the same thing. It doesn't work that way. No. You either go full bore, this is a science fiction show, or mm-hmm. this is a Twilight Zone show, or this is Dragons and Swords, or you don't. I mean, you can't go halfway and, you know, it's like, well, it's kind of science fiction, but it's not.
Well, but see, okay, here, I think you can make a slight argument against that. Briscoe County Jr. It was a steampunk Western.
Yeah, but that's genre. It was a period piece.
Steampunk genre wasn't.
Right.
A genre.
But, well, it was a science fiction Western.
Right.
You know,
well,
a steampunk. But it was one of those that fully embraced what it was. That's what I was saying. It didn't say, well, we're a Western, and, oh, we just happen to have some science fiction stuff.
But at the same time, it was its own thing. It was its own thing. People didn't know what to make of that show, which is what made it awesome and got it canceled.
Yes.
Same thing with The Tick.
Yeah.
Which, although we're getting The Tick back... That's what they tell us, and I want to see that really badly because if The Tick came out now, in this era of comic book movies and comic book television shows, well, there's a reason they're bringing it back. But if it had come out new, you know, now it would. I think the reception would be much, much greater.
You think?
Yeah, I think so because I think you're ready for. They're ready for, I think, a superhero comedy. There have been attempts at superhero comedies before.
Well, I've been saying we need more science fiction comedy just in general for years. I've been saying that.
Well, I think Guardians of the Galaxy has given people an idea you can do it.
Yeah, it's kind of an action comedy. But before that, we had what? Red Dwarf?
Spaceballs. Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah, and what? But what did we have on TV?
Hitchhiker's Guide. The British version.
Yeah, but that was so long ago, and that was such a limited
Hitchhiker's
run.
Hitchhiker's Guide, Red Dwarf.
But that was all British shows that nobody saw unless you watched it on PBS.
Quark.
Another British show.
Now, Quark was an American show.
Oh, was it? Yeah. That's right.
Which is another one that, well, and the thing was that they attempted to make a Star Trek parody. It's essentially a Star Trek parody.
Mm-hmm.
And it was another one that only had one season.
Yeah.
But it was...
But past that, I mean...
Yeah, there just hasn't been... You
can't... And I don't know what this is. It's almost like Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman's tricky. And, you know, people keep saying that Wonder Woman's hard to do as a film or a TV show. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. You can't... it's not that difficult to do a Wonder Woman film or TV show. And I think it's the same way to do it with science fiction comedy.
I think the problem is that the trickiness really lies in selling it to the studio or the network.
Yeah.
I think you have shows like Pushing Daisies. Okay, it's essentially a fantasy show.
Right.
You know, and, you know, it's a guy who's touch has magical powers. You know, it's as much a genre show as Once Upon a Time, and it's so much better. And it's a show that was canceled way, way too soon.
Yeah.
And when you look at something like... see, now I've scrubbed my brain of it. The moon one he just did, Brian Fuller.
High Moon.
You look at that, and you look at Pushing Daisies, and you go, what happened?
Yeah.
Because it's, you know.
High Moon was nothing like what we were expecting it to be.
No. And I think, unfortunately, it didn't go far enough.
It was bad.
It should have gone. Very bad. If you're going to push it into camp.
I mean, a robotic dinosaur.
Push it into camp.
Yeah.
Do a real science fiction comedy.
Yeah. And they didn't do that.
No, they did not.
Speaking of James Frayne, mm-hmm. he was in another show that only lasted a few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
The Cape.
Yeah, yeah.
And that actually was pretty good.
Well, I think the thing about The Cape, I was a mixed fan. I think it was at least consistent in its own little universe, and I kind of liked that.
It recognized the campiness mm-hmm. of this idea of a costumed, caped superhero.
Right.
And before the Marvel stuff, the Cape was the show that said, okay, this is a comic book.
Right.
And let's go all out, full tilt, comic book show.
Do you think if it came out, say, this year, it would have a longer life?
I don't know, because it was original characters.
Yeah.
If it had a tie-in with a publisher, with mm-hmm. an imprint, like either DC or Marvel especially, then it probably would have lasted. It probably would.
Now, there was one, and I just drew a blank on the name.
Now, there was a print edition of The Cape, but came out after after the show.
What's the terrible one? What's the terrible one about the guy who plays saxophone and works at a nightclub and he's a superhero by night? Nightman? Yeah.
Yeah.
That came from a comic book.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Mm, yeah. But that was almost that out of that same time period that you got things like Silk Stockings.
Stripperella.
And Stripperella. Well, I think, you know, there was that period where you had a lot of the cable shows where they were all trying to have their own little signature shows, and you had these kind of just knockoff things that were like, they kind of pushed the edge a little bit.
It was almost like we had a phase in the late 80s and 90s, mm-hmm. you know, because you had Hercules and Xena and Mutant X and all of those, you had War of the Worlds and that.
Right.
And then 10 years later, there was another push. Mm-hmm. You know, you had The Cape and Threshold and Invasion, all these things that happened in some right in that same time period,
right,
about 5 years ago. And all of that kind of went away at the same time.
And then right after that.
And then now.
Yeah.
you've got this huge, but now it's all superhero stuff. Right. It's not spaceships and ray guns or dragons and swords and stuff, unless you look at Merlin. And you know, Merlin's even going away. You've got Merlin, you've got Atlantis.
We've got Game of Thrones. I think there's a couple of things that may, with the success of the Marvel movies, we've had this explosion of the explosion of the recognition that the geeks of the world are a serious audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the genre loving fans, geek or not, are a real audience. And so you've got Game of Thrones, and you've got the shows that are. And a lot of it's coming out through the movies, but I mean, you look at something like Game of Thrones. That's a real high end.
Yeah,
you know, that's a very expensive show to make.
Well, and
audience. Walking Dead has a huge audience. These are genre shows.
I would make the argument that the genre shows are the ones that change the landscape of everything. Because you look at Star Wars, mm-hmm. Star Wars changed movie making all over the map. Everything was different after Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Not only from a production side of things, storytelling side, the music side, everything changed. Mm-hmm. Merchandising, special effects, everything. Now you've got the superhero shows and all of the genre stuff that's now coming in saying, it's okay to be a fan of this stuff.
Right.
We are having fun with this, except for Warner Brothers. And the proliferation of regular, quote unquote, regular shows that have a science fiction element in it, those just blew up all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we talked about Flash Forward. We've talked about the event, you know, where there's something that happens, but for the most part, the rest of the show is just a show.
Right.
I mean, you could argue that Revolution is the same kind of thing. I mean, it just so happens that there's no power in a post-apocalyptic thing, but it's a character drama,
right?
You know, it's not any different from ER or Grey's Anatomy or anything, because it's all personalities.
Sure.
Whereas you get something like, Flash Gordon, which didn't quite go all the way into camp like it should have.
Right.
And it wasn't quite as serious as it should have. You have two extremes in science fiction stuff, especially when you're doing shows like that you don't have a big budget.
Right.
You either go all the way camp, tongue-in-cheek, yes, wink, wink, the audience, we know what we're doing, this is fun, or you go Dark Knight with it and try to make it as realistic as possible and grim and gritty.
And I think somebody like Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers... You know,
I'd love to see a Buck Rogers show now.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine with the special effects that we can do now?
Oh, sure.
And the original Buck Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, against the Hans and, you know, all the original, because Howard Chaykin is doing, has been doing the new comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good.
I think that would be, I think you run into the...
Because not only do you do Man Out of Time,
right,
but you do Man Out of Time both ways. Because World War One, his attitude and mentality and everything is so completely different from what we've got now.
Right.
And you compound that by putting him in the 25th century.
Mm-hmm.
He's completely alienated from everybody.
Right.
And since we're... You know, the audience, you can find that character in somebody like Wilma Deering or whoever can be the audience proxy to get used to Buck.
Interestingly,
at the same time, getting us used to our environment in the 25th century.
Interestingly enough, Sleepy Hollow may have been a primer for that.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I think that, because wasn't there a rumor about us getting a Buck Rogers TV show again? Wasn't there talk about that a little while ago?
James Cawley.
Yeah.
Star Trek Phase 2 fan film.
Uh-huh.
James Cawley.
Yeah.
Had some kind of something working with Sony.
Right.
And the Dill family.
Uh-huh.
To develop a new Buck Rogers.
Right.
And he shot a little short something. And he had Gil Gerard and Aaron Gray playing Buck Rogers' parents in this short little bit. And he had one of the guys from his from Phase 2 was playing Buck Rogers. right. really too young, but it, you know, it was a fan film.
Right.
The special effects were pretty good,
mm-hmm.
but and I had talked to Gil Gerard about this at one of the times that we saw him at Planet Comic Con. Kali couldn't deliver on time. There was that whole, you know, yeah. I mean, you're a fan film. You're going to do things just kind of on a shoestring, your own schedule, right. when you can sure. do it, whenever. And the, and this is what I've been told, what I've heard. So I don't know how accurate it is, but my understanding was that when Kali and that group got to play in the big leagues, they couldn't hack it.
Well,
it was the demands of
oh sure
the production pressure and what it's like in the I don't want to say the real world with
but
film
it is,
production
but it is different
it is
different you are on it there's yeah there's a lot of yeah. difference between
so that's kind of fallen apart
yeah,
but I would love to see a Buck Rogers series
oh yeah or a proper that'd be so interesting to do a really proper well, Flash Gordon series
and you know if sci-fi is going to get into these big budget miniseries. They do Buck Rogers, and they do Flash Gordon.
Oh, just give us an 8-episode run. Give us a you know.
I'd be fine with 6 hours. Do three 2-hour blocks, and just do a mini series.
Oh sure, you could do yeah. Well yeah,
and you leave it open mm-hmm. so you could do more.
You do it like you did Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah,
you know, the first the pilot, the
Bill McGoldrick. Give us a call.
Yeah, wow.
Wouldn't that be fun? Oh.
Yes.
I think it's in the public domain, is it not?
Which one?
Either one. You want to just write it?
Oh, hey. Wow. Interesting.
We may, we'll put a pin in that. We'll get back to you on that, folks.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Well, Tron Legacy, not Tron Legacy, Tron Uprising.
Tron Uprising, yeah.
Be another one that didn't get...
Do we want to go with cartoons that were just...
There are so many.
What is it? The Avengers series before whatever they've got on the air now?
Yeah.
The animated series?
Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Beware the Batman.
Green Lantern.
Green Lantern.
Young Justice. Although Young Justice got more than one season.
It got two seasons, but...
But, yeah, it wasn't enough. Tower Prep.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Tower Prep wasn't animated, but it was another one
sure,
from Paul Dini,
sure,
and that was one of those that ran into the wrong people are watching it.
Right? Yeah. God.
You know that whole thing.
Once again, folks, if you have an audience, it's the right people.
Yeah.
Generally speaking,
if anybody's watching,
yeah.
keep going.
Have you paid attention to how the world works now when it comes to broadcast anything?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. But you know what? I think that we. It's not just animated. You run into networks that just are not trusting. And I get the financial aspects. I really do.
Right.
Networks are in the business of making money. Right?
I what?
Mean, you have to have a return on...
What?
I've heard tell.
We do all of this and we don't make any money. Oh, wait.
Right. Here we go. But you have shows that they don't even get a full season.
Yeah.
They get yanked. You know, remember Defying Gravity?
Barely.
See, the problem was that it was actually kind of an interesting show. Science fiction
Odyssey?
Show?
Odyssey 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that was an intriguing concept.
Well, and it was a time travel show that was a little different.
And people couldn't wrap their heads around it.
No, they couldn't. And the shame was is that you had, again, a really fantastic cast on that.
Mm-hmm.
Journeyman.
Yep. Which I think Journeyman suffered from... coming out too soon after Quantum Leap ended.
Well, wasn't
because
morning,
a
wasn't
lot
there
of called, people
wasn't
were,
there Morning Edition? Wasn't there another show with a
Morning Edition? Was I get the paper from tomorrow?
Right, but
and it was
but,
a kind of a time. But he did, he wasn't jumping anywhere.
Well, I know,
he was,
but I think
he was almost, preventing
you
what
almost,
happens tomorrow.
You almost had this kind of little,
yeah.
there was a little spattering of shows that were kind of like you know
yeah. But Journeyman
the
came out
impacting somehow.
I think Journeyman came out what 2 or 3 years after Quantum Leap ended,
something like that.
And it was so much like Quantum Leap because mm-hmm. he was jumping back in time
but
along his own timeline
right.
into himself, and he was doing all these things to make changes and affect
mm-hmm.
you know the time stream and whatnot. And a lot of comparisons were made to Quantum Leap. And it was
right.
like, well, if you're going to give us this, why can't we have another season of Quantum Leap?
Right, exactly.
Give us another Quantum Leap.
I think that came out about the same time. Maybe it was a little bit later. And it's not a genre show. Remember Life?
Mm-hmm. Kind
of. It was a. It had a lot. It actually had a lot of genre actors in it.
Yeah.
But another show that didn't quite seem to gel with audiences. It was a well-written show.
That was a cop show. That was a procedural.
It was a procedural that was a little bit different. They were pushing the boundaries of the procedural for being, you know, everybody in the show except the main character was in a procedural. He was in his own little show, and it was, but it was,
it actually worked.
It actually worked, and I think that it got canceled early too for the very simple reason that some of this stuff, once you get a little experimental with some of this stuff, the studio it greenlights it, but then it doesn't give it a chance to connect with its audience.
Well, it doesn't connect with the suits.
Right.
It may connect with the audience just fine, and it may connect with the audience in a way that maybe you don't see all of the numbers right away, but the suits don't get it. And that's the death knell for it. If the suits don't get it, it's done.
I think some of this stuff you're going to have to find, some of these shows would have had a life beyond a short season or one season if they ended up on these cable networks. Because you're going to have, you know, a network that's going to budget for Game of Thrones is going to give, you know, we've spent a crap ton of crap ton of money on this show. We better give it some time to breathe because we don't want to sit there and think we've just thrown away millions and millions of dollars for nothing.
And if you want to throw away millions and millions of dollars, we are certainly willing to take some of that.
Right, we are. Right?
And we're gonna wrap it up right there because we could talk about all of the different shows that died early deaths.
Well, here's the thing, folks. If in the you could leave us a comment, or you could leave us a message, or you can call us. There's all different ways to tell us which show you think only got one season and needed more than one.
Send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com, or you can call our hotline. It's area code 573-42-SCIFI. I don't think very many people call that number.
No.
Yeah. Call our hotline. Blow up our hotline, 573-42-SCIFI, and you can send us an email, h2o@scififorme.com. Get on the social media. Connect with us over there. Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, Google+, Tumblr, YouTube. We're all over the place. And that's not, I don't know if it's all good, but, you know, it's a connection
there
that you
go.
Can make. And you're preferred.
You have options to find us.
That's right. Options are always good. And we are going to exercise the option of ending this show at this point and leave you wanting more. So we will be back next week. And I think we'll talk about Uwe Boll next week.
Oh, you're a bad, bad man.
All right, that's going to do it for us, Timothy Harvey.
Yes, sir.
And my name is Jason Hunt. This has been H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Don't forget, check out superherostuff.com during their December Christmas holiday season sale. And we will be back next week.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2014 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.